Hello and welcome. A new year, a new season, and a new episode of the AI Bot Room. And welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. Of course, with me, my wonderful co-host, Svetlana.
Hello. Welcome back. Happy to be here for season two of our podcast series.
We tried to improve. We have some new stuff for you in the pipeline. Starting today with a very special topic that's near and dear to your heart, Svetlana, as far as I know.
Yes. AI risks. I feel like that's one of the hottest topics right now as more and more companies are implementing it. And AI is a bit riskier to deal with, which we'll talk about. Seven key sources of risks that any company should really pay attention to as they're kind of taking on AI projects into their organization. So yeah, this is a really, I think, timely topic as more organizations want that positive ROI, but they also want to mitigate risks.
So, but it's not only like talking about the risks. This episode is about risk assessment, right?
We have a guide, which we'll get to exactly. Well, I think we'll talk about the seven topics and how do you actually, what seven areas of risk could AI be introducing? And those ultimately are sources of or points of failure in the system, right? So, and we do have a systematic way of kind of laying out the land of those seven risks. And I think there's flexibility to add additional ones and really understand which risks do you tackle first, second, last, and then how critical are those to the success of your AI implementation. So we do have a systematic approach. There is a grid, there is a system behind it as well, but I feel like we need to get into the seven areas first.
Yeah, just wanted everyone to know, when you finish this episode, you should be more aware about what to look for in the first place.
Let's get going. So I think it's important. So I think to kick things off, why are AI risks different than traditional software development? One of the key areas that I feel like it's comes to data. So in traditional software development, you're kind of creating rules or rule-based logics and you're kind of validating those algorithms. You have kind of checks and balances along the way before you actually deploy things into production. But with AI, you're dealing with data. And so not always do you get the clean data, how your algorithms are actually getting the data, and then what the especially large language models do with that data is also could lead to different consequences, right? So such as hallucinations, maybe retrieving the wrong information and things like that. So you can't always control for all kinds of use cases and things that could potentially go wrong. So AI is just different than the way that you would manage those projects, but also how you're kind of evaluating risks because they are traditionally different from traditional software development. You also there's a source of, I would say, like AI hype with AI projects. So sometimes people tackle projects or introduce unnecessary risk with AI into solutions that should not be solved with artificial intelligence in the first place. They're just too simple of tasks that could have been solved more simply with traditional programming than AI. So it's just, misfits. Sometimes, you're introducing new risk because of wrongly applied techniques to the problems, but then also, the types of models and how they're dealing with data and then how that data is transmitted. You're also dealing with tools or API calls, dealing over the public internet. You're talking about, these large language foundational models being used as, APIs and things like that. So for larger enterprises who are in especially large, highly regulated spaces, this becomes also a key consideration, and I would say one of the reasons why they take a little bit longer to deploy some of their solutions because they are checking all of these potential new introductions of risks. And some of them, I feel like I have spoken to actually one executive in the past from a big, Fortune 500 company, and he said, it's not the risks that I'm afraid of; it's what risks that I don't know that is the biggest fear that I have in my mind. So.
I would love to ask a question. So
yeah,
before we talk about the specifics, who is this for? Like, whom might I be for me to for this to be relevant?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So if you're an executive in a tech company who is undertaking, you know, technical projects with artificial intelligence, so if you are, or you've attempted artificial intelligence before, maybe you've done chatbots and it's just not sticking, you're not really sure why or how and what points of failures actually like led to your kind of the falling or the stalling of those projects and how you can proactively mitigate those. I would say it's for technical founders, their teams, or executives that are still exploring kind of the artificial intelligence space and they want to understand proactively what things do they need to look out for when they take on these AI projects. And do we have the tools under our belt? Do we have the skill sets to cover for those risks? Or are these areas that I need help with? I feel like more and more companies in the technical realm, you know, even if you're dealing mostly traditional software development, are taking on, you know, these AI agents or introducing AI agents into their workflows. So this is becoming more and more of a common, I would say, undertaking. But again, it's like what you don't know what you don't know type of thing. And this is where we're hoping to close that gap for you to kind of have a more structured approach for how you think about risk.
Yeah, it's especially when you think about like actual agent applications or agentic applications, they grow in complexity like quite fast. So there's a lot of stuff to talk about and talk to. I also have some had some anecdotes in my mind when I first read the topics. I would say let's dive in. Could you give us an overview what we're looking at?
Yes. So the framework that we're going to go over, there are seven core areas of risks, and this comes from, you know, experience, research, and, you know, lots of kind of hours being actually in the field of implementing AI projects that we've kind of consolidated it to seven areas. Think of it as like a framework of seven different areas. What could be, again, a point of failure into your AI implementation? So we call it the Clear 7 AI Risk Framework. And it covers, again, seven areas of different kind of parts of your AI implementation that you need to pay, you know, kind of pay closer attention to. And we'll get into it. I don't want to kind of allude or give away too much. But I think as we kind of walk through it, I think you'll find it very, very interesting. And I think hopefully it'll start resonating. And the idea or the hope is that, you know, as we kind of go through it, you'll kind of get the, was that what was happening? I've seen that. And okay, we'll have some mitigation strategies. Yeah, let's get started. So the first area of risk is feasibility. So, and the gist of this question or the gist of this kind of risk area is, can we actually build what we're undertaking? So is there sufficient data to actually take on this project? Do we have the infrastructure? Do we have the actual, you know, the necessary compute in our cloud environment to actually support these models? And then are we just kind of ready to take on this project? Do we know the tools in the market to actually orchestrate the relevant solution for the objective that we're hoping to solve?
Yeah. So this is also like different depth to it, but at the basis is like data, I think it's the biggest point of that. Infrastructure and technology, of course, is one too. Especially technology, like, are the models that we have access to are capable to do enough or good enough? So they don't have to be perfect, but they have to be good enough. And of course, data is like the main point. I always give this idea of like, I want to build a marketing tool. And this marketing tool should like give me ad copy. I don't have proper ad copy to feed in as an example of a good app copy, it will be generic stuff that's unusable. So do I have the data? If not, maybe I don't build a marketing tool.
And what I've seen also happen is that, you know, executives might have these moonshot ideas. So I think part of like also the engineering side is that you might have the data, but it's a moonshot idea. You're looking for something that is like completely autonomous, agentic. You're thinking AGI levels type of stuff. It's just not freaking feasible. Or you will have to, you know, for the type of use case, the return on investment is just going to be so minimal that it's like, why would we actually do this? But we'll get into the kind of that side of it, the viability part of it. But it's sometimes it's just like a moonshot idea that I don't think that the technology of today can actually solve it. So that's part of the feasibility. And can we actually build what we're aiming to build?
Yeah. Another thing is we also have like trade-offs. And these trade-offs, like sometimes you have to like lose some speed for more precision. Mm-hmm. You could also find that, yeah, just from my rough calculation, the costs are already like barely feasible. If I go even deeper, and if you also like just add some buffer, you might end up in a place where you lose money. So and that's like, for example, AI coding is like big. There's a lot of costs. Like I pay several hundred bucks a month for the inference for AI coding, which for me it's worth it, but it's just like there can be substantial costs even on a small scale already. You have to consider that.
Yes, and I would say also, I think we'll get to it, but also part of the feasibility is that, especially with reasoning use cases that require multi steps to actually, you know, get to the output that you're actually desiring, you're treating latency of the responses in order to get higher quality of output, right? There is a trade-off. So it's a bit unrealistic. Again, can we actually fulfill? Is it feasible for us to do sub-second response time? Sometimes it is not, just because of the, it's not a dependency on how quickly your infrastructure moves or how quickly or how skilled your internal team is. It's just that the inference of these models is slower because in order for them to optimize for higher accuracy of output, you're sacrificing latency. So again, those are the things that you have to look for.
Just in case you don't know, inference is the process of like actually getting output from the model.
Yes, and latency is how long does it take to actually get the output or get the response from the system. So, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's feasibility. What's the next one on the list?
Yeah, the next area of risk is desirability risk, right? So will they actually use it if we build it? So if, I would say if you've built something, you know, it's a shiny object syndrome and everyone else in the industry has it and you're like, oh, I think it'll be really cool if we introduce it into our organization. And the use case you know, that you saw was in the marketing agency and you work in the industrial area and that's not the main business of you. Yes, it's very cool and it works for them. It doesn't mean that it actually works for your organization. So just because it's feasible and then you're able to actually build it, it doesn't mean that it's going to be actually adopted or it's desirable to your end users. And so when you're actually prioritizing use cases, its desirability needs to be high because, and the reason why it's important is because you want more iterations, you want more use of these AI systems for them to improve over time. So if you're building something that doesn't actually get used, you're kind of wasting away kind of the investment that you've put into bring that solution in the first place. So desirability needs to be there in order for you to align to the people who are screaming, we need this tool, because if you have hungry consumers and you give them the tool, you have higher chances they will actually use it.
It's not only consumers, also like if you have users internally, if you want to build up an internal tool or something or automate something, like if the people don't have trust, which is a big part of acceptance and desirability, that you think about how to build trust, how to build understanding for this, how to also deliver the user experience as a whole, which is, AI is just a small part of it. If you build an AI solution, like the integration around it is basically 95% of what you have to do and where you spend your time with. And then you have this intelligent engine in the middle, like triggering stuff, but you still have to do all the integrations, which is just like, I had a workshop with a company, they built a complete solution without any wreck or something, because they spent most of the time integrating properly. And then I came in, helped them with the proper advanced AI techniques, and then they were able to quickly integrate them because they did a lot of work beforehand. So that's like UX integration is a big part. Therefore, only invest your time if you really think you can get a lot of value from it.
Yes, and I think we'll probably have an episode sometime in the future for how do you develop and what are different ways of integrating AI into workflows. And it's a deep passion of mine to talk about the project, this type of topic. So we'll love to kind of dive into that as almost like a standalone episode. But one of the things that I did want to share, because I think we'll continue down the list, but this resource that of the Clear 7 framework is going to be available to our audience. I want to make sure that, you know, for folks who are kind of new to AI, kind of risk assessment, monitoring, just they're undertaking this for the first time, we've created a 22-page or 23-page document that covers this at length. So everything that we're covering in today's episode and more. And I just want to make sure that we disseminate that knowledge. We've created it for you to accompany the episode. So we'll link it in the description on the YouTube channel. And how would they find it on the for pod people listening?
You either have to visit Spark Change or you have to look in the description. I'll try to put the link into the description. Otherwise, I would just say yeah, check out the YouTube channel. We're still working on the podcast side, but if you're listening on Spotify or Apple podcast something, we'll figure something out for you. I'll put this in the description. Whatever we figure out.
Yeah, maybe if you could message us, we'll give you we'll drop you a link for sure.
Of course.
So, let's keep going. Maybe number three.
So we had feasibility, desirability, and now we are at
viability. So this is, and I think hopefully folks who are who've been in the tech industry, the first three are not new. I think we'll get into the unique ones, but it's the DVF framework. So the third one is viability. So can we actually afford it? So part of being able to stand up AI solutions is not just the initial takes. And a lot of vendors offer 2 week or sometimes months of demo, kind of free credits for you to use it. And then they get it into production and they realize how expensive it is to run these solutions. And then they continue to scale it with more users. And those hidden costs basically start to rub them off the ROI they were hoping. So part of it is viability is the cost effectiveness, but also compliance and regulation, right? So how do you, is it even compliant for us to take a use case with artificial intelligence? One use case, because I do work in, work on in the highly regulated spaces, but can you actually give advice in, let's say, critical settings, and then delegate that task to an LLM, specific to your industry? So if you think construction, I don't know, your frontline worker, maybe it's military, I don't know, but there are going to be certain guidelines and regulations and compliance things that you have to hit before you can actually hit production on these systems. And so sometimes it gets overlooked, there's lawsuits and all kinds of things, or, there are certain guardrails that are not put in place before things get launched. And things like that, can we actually sustain this, or is this going to be a very short kind of undertaking? There's also related to guardrails is bias and ethics. So I think a good use case or maybe example of this was Grok, because they, I think, raced, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know that Edgar, you're good on staying maybe with the latest kind of the timelines, but I think Grok, by Elon, was created within 2 or 3 week timeframe. So they didn't put all of the appropriate guardrails in place. And so when they launched it, people were trying to take advantage of the system. And of course, it gave biased outputs and then it was giving them unethical responses. And so before they actually checked all of those things, of course they didn't take the system down, but everyone can afford to do it.
Grok is also kind of grinding on that part that they are kind of open. Besides that, ethics and biases, the thing is trained on human data. Human data is biased by nature. Mm-hmm. And so you have to deal with it. You can deal with it. So you have to put in guardrails. We talked about that. You have to test it, and you have to, when you test it, try to break it. This is about risk assessment today, so we won't go into all the details, but we will have upcoming episodes talking about that. But yeah, that's something. If you, for example, I had this in a workshop with a customer. We had the case of checking CVs, and if you evaluate CVs, you're pretty quickly in the space of like biases. Mm-hmm. And dealing with also hallucinations and stuff, but especially biases. Like at least in the EU, you have stuff like the EU AI Act. There are also other AI compliance stuff. It's basically in the EU, you are not allowed to accept or decline someone based on an automated evaluation. There has to be a human involved. So that's just the rule. And therefore, yeah, you have to be really careful if you have assistance for evaluation from an automated system, like an AI system. That's fine and all, can do this. And you can also set up your AI to be capable of doing this, but you have to be careful.
Yeah, because agency might be after you to require you to take down your system. There's multiple industry use cases where that has happened. So make sure that, can we afford it, but is it compliant? Is it ethical? Is it following kind of, again, like all of the industry best kind of practices, especially where you are located in the world? So there are going to be some variabilities, but nonetheless, it is part of keeping that solution viable for a long period of time so that you can get your return on investment. All right.
We had one last part is reputation, which also pans into like it's also a viability thing. Like if the thing you put out there is damaging your reputation, you might consider to at least assess the risk. I often get this from Google employees when they talk about like, yeah, OpenAI is the startup. They can just put out stuff at the breaks. No way, no one cares. But if Google F's up, that's an issue. and the reputation part is just a lot bigger in their case. So yeah, just keep that in mind. But yeah, we should keep going.
No, that was a good story. So hopefully it helped enhance your understanding and what viability is all about. So next one is
a cool one. Yeah.
Strategic fit. Yeah. So this is where we're kind of getting into kind of the space. What the heck is strategic fit? So AI, and I've seen this multiple times, and it kind of, even though I'm accustomed to it, it still frustrates. And I'm like, why can't folks get this? That you can't implement or you shouldn't implement AI if it's not aligned to one of your business needs, your customer needs, or your business objectives, right? So if there's not strategic fit for you to take on this AI project, it's a shiny object syndrome. That it's basically, it's shining and then you're trying to chase the shiny object without kind of having the promise that it's actually impact your bottom line, right? So you have to make sure that you tackle an AI initiative that you can then measure. And you can justify that investment. How can you justify an investment for a shiny object that has no promise of bringing or impacting any part of your business? It's just cool because everyone else is doing it. So,
it also has to fit your vision in some way. Like, what is your company going to do, and how does it fit into the overall strategy of our company, of a product? Especially for your product teams out there, like, you have to be certain that this is kind of like in character. Like if you are doing like hard number crunching and do like finance assistance, an image generator might be not the thing you have to build, even if it's cool.
That's a good example. I think strategic fit, where it's aligning, but I think that there's also, again, frameworks and ways that you can identify, well, which use cases should I be tackling? How can I future-proof my organization? There's also, again, frameworks that in the future episodes will cover or how do you think about short-term use cases and how does that align and impact my bottom line and give me the ROI I'm looking for the short term? What about the medium term? And what about these, again, longer term projects? How can I potentially even reimagine workflows? How can I introduce new opportunities, revenue generating opportunities with AI? And these tend to be a little bit longer, but you can start now, but you have to be kind of goal oriented towards what you're building. As I think, Edgar, you said, towards the future. What does that future kind of look like? And then you want to make sure that you're kind of making, you're crawling initially with your initial use cases, then you're walking, then you're running with these use cases, because you should be contributing to your some goal in the time frame that you're hoping to solve it. So this is all about strategic fit.
And also don't forget about the competition. Like how does this AI feature that I want to build and I want to integrate, how does this like position me also against my competition? It's the core of every strategy decision. It's kind of the same for AI, plus all the other risks we're talking about. It has to be because the company can profit of it, not because it sounds cool.
Yes.
Like, don't do AI projects just for marketing purposes.
And then I think it'll come bite you in the rear, I would say, when end of the quarter or end of the year kind of reconciliations of budgets and where are we spending the money on? Because typically projects are assessed as what value they're generating back to your organization. So if it's not measured and you're spending money on these projects, and if you can't kind of quantify the value that you're getting back on these solutions, and if it's not, you know, again, some of them can be softer metrics, some of them can be harder, like financial metrics, but there should be some way contributing to what you're doing and how you're trying to grow strategically as a company, right? So what isn't measured that doesn't get done type of thing would be really appropriate here.
Yeah. Okay. Next one, expertise.
Oh, this one's a good one. I'm a big stickler on this. So expertise risk is all about, do we even know how to do this, right? So this is becoming more and more, I would say, an apparent risk with lots of organizations, again, who are newer to artificial intelligence. They're taking it on. They think, you know, well, there's these established frameworks. There's, you know, open source frameworks. There's, you know, established patterns. Everyone's been doing it. We're just going to figure it out. Problem is like the failure rates of these AI projects. And I think you've seen this, you've been approached by my, you know, companies. I've been approached multiple times. It's like, we can't get these projects beyond pilots. My first question is, who's working on these projects? Do they have the expertise of actually tackling this, or someone at least on their team to show them how, right? Like, you need kind of the guide to show you how to actually follow those best practices. But if you are tackling these projects, these very complex projects, which AI tends to be for the first time, I mean, it's probably going to take a few repetitions and failures for you to learn and really get good at the craft. But if you don't have the patience to fail on the first attempt, then I think the next best thing that you can do is to get a guide to who will show you the expertise. So the two things that...
And also failing might not lead to proper results. I had sometimes really dig deep into testing and trial and erroring and just knowing some like tips and tricks basically. The thing is, like, a lot of information you find when you like do like learning by yourself and just winging it basically, it's not that easy to get to deep information. Like, there is a lot, like, you can find it eventually, but you have to dig quite deep and quite a lot, so it might be better to get someone who already did the digging. I always say, I try to save you 6 to 12 months in pain. and I actually mean it like that, because I had that pain and it was painful.
we don't want you to go through it as well. So one of the things that kind of that goes into this category of risk comes down to two things. And usually, I ask these things. Do you have the experience of actually tackling this, a similar problem, or working with this technology? So this is the technical expertise. But the second piece is the domain knowledge. So especially if you're working in specialized areas, let's say it's marketing, if you're working in healthcare, if you're working in finance, and you're tackling these use cases where kind of have to understand how either data flows through these systems, how does the appropriate responses look like to these audiences. You have to have both. You have to not just have the technical expertise, yep, because between domains, they don't always translate as well. So if you really want to have, I would say, like, to know the secret sauce behind addressing this, the expertise risk, and what is my guide typically should be consisting of, it's technical expertise and a domain knowledge in your specific space.
Yeah,
would be the two key ingredients.
I would want to add something that, because I presented this to my participants in the workshop, and they were like, yeah, what does this mean? Like, we can't do it. And that's not what this is about. All this risk assessment stuff, and we get to how to assess it in the end. But I just want to add, when we talk about risk, it's just like we want to create awareness. And if you, for example, find out after risk assessment, we find there's a high risk that we run into problems with our technical or domain expertise, the solution is not like we don't do it. The solution is like we have to see how we can mitigate the risk so that we don't run into it down the line. So it's not about like do or not do. It's about mm-hmm. like assessing and then drawing the right conclusions. Like, one conclusion can be we don't do it. Don't get me wrong. But it does not have to be. Like, it's not one or zero. Like, there is a lot in between. And for mm-hmm. example, for the expertise risk, you can either hire new people, you can hire consultants, you can hire trainers to train your staff, or do all of it. because you might also find that you just lack some resources, or you have all the resources, you also have domain expertise, and you have really good technical guys, but you just don't have the experience, then you get the consultant, right? So that's like, think about all this risk assessment, not about like do or not do. Think about mm-hmm. it like to assess, to find out where we have weak points, which we have to tackle first, and then we can start, or to ensure that we have a good project in the first place.
And we show you how you could prioritize that risk as well. So like, where do we think we could, it would be the most impactful to address first, second, third? Where should we take a bit of chance, you know, and things like that. So knowing, I would say, is the key, I think, emphasis here. So I'm glad that you emphasize that. So one thing that maybe a quick plug here, because I think we have two more risks to cover. But one thing that we're going to start introducing, because we want to disseminate our knowledge, because we've been learning again in the time that we've been away a lot. And we want to do more workshops, live interacting with you, kind of having that face-to-face, more regularly. So we are going to be hosting our kind of first workshop next week, which is the 22nd, I believe we decided, May 22nd, between 12 Eastern and 1 p.m. Eastern, to talk to you about what it takes to stand up a successful AI project. How do you actually achieve positive ROI for your investments? How do you maximize that ROI? How do you mitigate these risks kind of strategically? And then how do you control costs? And that's another runaway factor that contributes to failure rates of AI. So again, we've organized it into six different pillars that you have to kind of get right in order to, I would say, accelerate the path of your AI adoption. And so we'd love to share and get your input on that. So we'll be sharing that link in the chat here as well.
Yeah, in the description down below. We'll love you to join. We'll be most likely on LinkedIn. So
cool.
See you then. Okay, risk number six.
Awesome. So this one's an interesting one. It's we're calling it AI output risk. And so this kind of goes back to this whole kind of reputation, brand, and kind of the type of, I would say, effect you leave on the market, especially if this is a tool, again, and just if this is a tool that is internally facing, where the risks are lower because your internal staff, and they'll kind of flag these maybe biased outputs or whatever is wrong with the system to you, and it's internally, you're able to kind of control the risks. There's still risks, again, even with internally facing systems. But if you're doing more of a B2C launch where you're kind of publicly making it available, and I think a good maybe example there is, Chevy, who was enabling AI agent to sell vehicles basically off of their website. And, you know, the software engineer basically took advantage and he basically tricked the AI to sell, a pickup truck for a dollar.
Yeah.
And that ended up being all over the news. People are just like, well, how reckless can Chevy be, you know, and, launching this kind of chatbot
I think it was a single seller or like kind of like a car salesman basically who did this with his store. But yeah, you have to be careful. Hallucinations. Been there. Everyone who's touched AI knows that it sometimes comes up with stuff it does not have to come up with in the first place because it does not know it. In the end, you can do a lot of techniques, but you have to test and try and really evaluate the output and that's why it's also important to test as early as you can with your users. To actually try to break the system, like try to generate the wrong output, try to break systems, you don't have to go into all the depth of jailbreaking. Like most cases, you're B2B, you have kind of a somewhat controlled environment. If not, you have to be even more careful. And then you have to also think about like how to monitor stuff, how to get the human in the loop mechanisms in, which means that you not rely 100% on the AI output, but you define basically rules or circumstances where you say, okay, now I want the human in the loop to make an assessment of the situation, to figure out some workflows for allowing stuff to happen. That's basically where you have to try to get the system robustness.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to happen, for it to become robust, you have to try to break it.
And I think that there's, again, different workflows, as you mentioned, depending on the use case, it's hard to prescribe and tell you all of the potential kind of workflows that could work for you. But there are ways to introduce kind of checkpoints through your workload to be able to prevent some of these like output risks for AI. But it comes down to like, well, why does it matter, especially for an internal facing tool? Brand, reputation risks, trust from your employees. Like
basically all of the above.
Everything that could go wrong could hurt your company, whether it's again an internal tool or external. So those are the things that you should pay proper attention to. So should we move on to our last but not least?
Yeah.
This is, I would say, a big one. And so user adoption risk. So the first one, I think you'll be like, well, how is it different from desirability? Desirability is, do they actually want it, right? So have they expressed it, or is there a particular need that I can actually anchor my use case to? I give them a solution and they've been like jumping up and down and saying like, I want this tool. If you build it, I'm going to use it. With user adoption, and this is becoming more and more of a problem with artificial intelligence because people fear AI in the first place. So this has nothing to do with desirability, but this is being kind of rolling out. Rolling out like these tools in the organization, and people are just like, I don't want to use it. Like, this is going to replace me. Oh, you want to automate that process? You're going to be taking over my job. So one of the things, again, you could be working in a large organization, you have the strategic fit, you've checked up all the boxes and the other risks, but then you forgot about this change management aspect of the plan, and you roll this out and you're like, crickets, why isn't anyone using it? And why is the adoption kind of fails?
And a lot of times, let me say, as someone who's done 15 years of rolling out software automations in companies, people start to lobby against you. they start to try to not only not use it, but make others not use it too. So as well. So yeah, this is people can be quite like averse to change in the first place. Mm-hmm. And if that change even like is combined with fear, they get highly creative.
happening. Yes.
So the best thing you can do, and it's I just mentioned it, like get your users early in the process. For example, if I have a company and we need to find out where to start with AI, the first thing I ask is like, what's the most annoying thing in your day you would love to get rid of as quickly as possible? And then we can see if we can fix it with AI, because that's something that people don't want to do in the first place. And if you automate them, that's a good entry point. That's also the thing where I always say, like, don't start with like the big solution. Start because most of the time what you have in your head is level 3 solution, like the high, like agentic everything automated. Start at level 1. Like, just give the people something to work on and to work with, and so they feel for this to be more of a tool than a replacement. Educate people properly, and the big one, and I can't overstate this, trust. You have to get the people to a point where they build enough trust in the system, and that also is the expectation management part we had in the second risk. If you manage the expectation, say, hey, this system won't work all the time, but it will work enough times so that it really, really will help you, and people know that, they're more likely to live with the errors the system has. If you say, hey, this is a perfect system, just use it, people encounter error first time, second time, and they start to not trust system anymore. And even better, you think about the errors beforehand, or maybe you know it from testing, and they say, hey, this error can happen, but then you can do this and then it's good. For example, you know that you have cases where you just need to retry, and the second time it most likely will work. And if you know this beforehand and you give the people this tool with the like what to do when it goes wrong, cheat sheet basically, then the adoption will be a lot better.
Yeah. And I think that one of the other things that I'll kind of mention, the other side of it is like, yeah, starting small, getting them a little bit of an appetizer for what AI can really do. But I would say the other extreme, people are fearing their job loss and AI is out to get them and all of their jobs. A lot of it is actually ungrounded. I would say they're fearing AGI and ASI, that, you know, the artificial general intelligence and things like that, that don't even exist. So sometimes just having that conversation and educating your teams on how AI works, what it's truly capable of, like, could be completely game changing. It'll open up people's minds. It's like, oh, I shouldn't be worried about AGI or ASI now. Probably not for another 10, 15 years. You'll be fine for the next couple. Like, continue using our, you know, go use our tools. You'll be,
great. Honestly, I wouldn't even connect it. Like, this is a tool. We try to help you to have less annoying work. Let's do that. And also give the people like proper feedback channels, so that they are always like, if something happens, something does not work as you expected, the people have a clear feedback channel and best case even some live support to help you out, to help them out. Sorry. Think of it like the big trust bubble. How do you get trust into the system, and then the usability will be better.
Address the concerns through education, I think, would be good. So we've covered, again, the 7 risks. We talked about the feasibility, desirability. We talked about viability risks. We talked about strategic fit, expertise risks, AI output risks. And the last one we just covered was user adoption risks. So that basically covers kind of the core 7. And do you ask like, oh, what about security and compliance and like all kinds of other things? Of course, every industry is different. And so there's going to be some a lot of overlaps between others. Some there's going to be some specific risks to your specific industry. So the AI risk matrix is quite flexible and accommodating other groups as well.
But and there's also a lot more details in the PDF, which you can download. And there's also some security parts in there. So yeah, we cannot like dive into stuff too deeply in the podcast. Therefore, yeah, read the document or join us on the workshop next week.
Yeah. So, and then if you do get the guide, there is a nice impact grid where you can actually score all of these risks. And there's some like nice instructions, like very simple. We try to keep it like very lightweight on the content so that you can simply just do it. And you can actually visualize it like a heat map. So what things should be, are very important and the likelihood of them happening. So what should we be addressing? So if it's talent, if it's AI output risk, we just don't know how to mitigate the output risk. Maybe that's what we should pay attention to first. Yeah, what we're doing is actually desirable, probably not a risk to us right now. But I think it's a very helpful matrix to actually visualize where the risk is for you. And you can, again, add others to this kind of framework as well. So you can visualize lots of different risks. So I think this will be quite helpful for those who are implementing AI.
Yeah. And like I said, in the expertise part, it's about assessing. So you take all these seven areas, you get your team together, and based on whatever it is you want to do, you try to assess all these parts. And you might have parts where you say, okay, we are totally fine in infrastructure, so and it's totally feasible, we can do this on the feasibility side. There is a low risk, and you don't have to focus a lot on it. But you have, for example, stuff that regulation, for example, where you say, okay, we have a regulatory risk that we have to account for, and there's a high likelihood that we get that this risk is becoming a problem down the line. Mm-hmm. Then you just put more focus in, and what you get in the end is the stuff that you have little to no worries about it disturbing your project. And you have stuff that's like really high on the list, and that's your high priority stuff. So you go ahead, you evaluate this, the likelihood, and what impact would it have. You multiply it, put it in the matrix, and then your whole team is aware of like, hey, these are parts which we either have to act now and make decisions, for example, hire consultants, hire new people, whatever. And you have also an awareness in your whole team that this stuff might come up along the way. So in everything I do, I keep track in my head, or like just like by looking at the matrix, if one of these things is triggering the work I do right now at this moment. So that's like the two ways to look at it. And yeah, so it's not a blocking stuff. It's assessing and acting accordingly.
Yeah. I think that's nicely summarized. And again, we were hoping to bring you some more actionable tools and frameworks like this in the upcoming episodes so that you can take these as frameworks back to your teams. But if you are ready to potentially, and you've been exploring AI space and you're hungry to get, you know, faster results with artificial intelligence, we do have an AI ROI accelerator program that we'd love to talk to you about that, again, kind of focuses on the key areas where people are hungry to really get right with AI projects. It's achieving ROI, return on their investment, finally, in making sure that they are investing in the right projects while mitigating these risks, and this, again, and others that are relevant to your industry, but also controlling costs. So how do you manage these projects from taking years to actually a much more consolidated timelines? And we'll show you kind of our approach to how we do that. So if you're ready to talk to us, we schedule a 15-minute free discovery call with us. Myself or Edgar will walk you through the program and see if we're the right fit. So hope you give us a call.
And if you are in Germany, we can also do this in German. So it doesn't have to be English. Just sorry.
I don't speak English, so that'll be on Edgar. So I only speak English, not German. So
you could do Russian.
Oh yeah, we could also, we have a third language that we could deliver these workships in.
You I mean, no, like I could listen and understand half of what you say, but like
listen and nod. So Edgar, listen to the nods.
Yes. No, okay. Awesome. So call us up if you're more want to have a deeper assessment we are happy to help. But besides that, download the PDF, get this in your teams. It will help you to get your AI projects better planned and also better executed. That was our episode on risk assessment. Svetlana, thank you very much. You did most of the work on this. It's your area. I'm more the technical guy.
I think we definitely lots of examples, I think, are applicable across both technical and the business sides. But again, we'll have more technical. We'll try to bring in more of this strategic views into the planning aspects of your projects so that we can give you a much more, again, comprehensive angle to AI implementation. So
this season will definitely be a mix of different things. Maybe not as many episodes, but we try to add a lot more value.
Awesome.
Okay. So thank you very much, Svetlana. Thank you very much, everyone out there, for listening. Like we told you, you find all the links we mentioned down in the description when you listen to the podcast. It's most likely also in the descriptions there. That being said, that was from my side. Thank you very much. And Svetlana, you have the last words.
Yeah, no, and thank you so much for your time and looking forward to hearing your feedback and on new topics and things like that that you're interested in, because we are here to maximize the value for you. So thank you so much. And we'll talk hopefully in the next time.
Yeah, see you next one. Bye.
Thank you.